President Obama has sent a string of top officials this week to Israel to discuss, among other things, his demand that Israel freeze settlements in the West Bank. There are over 120 Israeli settlements and over 100 outposts on Palestinian lands considered illegal under numerous international resolutions. Obama's insistence on freezing expansion has resonated with many countries who have joined the U.S. call. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has argued for the completion of structures that are partly built and to allow for what he calls natural growth of the settlements. Meanwhile, Israeli civilians have taken it upon themselves to stage makeshift outposts this week in defiance and with the implicit support of the Israeli military. Young Israelis in particular have set up tents and huts in the West Bank this week to send a message to the U.S. One 16-year-old told the Guardian newspaper that, quote, it contributes to the entire people of Israel that the land is being settled. But a group called Combatants for Peace, comprising Israeli ex-combat soldiers and Palestinian ex-fighters, built a counter-outpost nearby, whose protest tent was destroyed by the army. Also on the agenda for U.S.-Israel relations is Iran's nuclear capability and the perceived threat to Israel. There are rumors that Israel could concede on the settlement issue in exchange for a tougher U.S. stance on Iran. The rift over the settlements has strained U.S.-Israeli relations, and Obama's approval ratings in Israel have drastically dropped from 73% in 2007 to 38% this year. My guest is David Hosey. He is the national media coordinator of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. He joins us now from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Uprising, David.
It's great to be here, Sonali. Thank you.
So first, let's talk about the settlements themselves and the history of the settlements, what they sort of mean in terms of the occupation. As far as I understand, these are basically Israeli settlers that have, with the blessing of the government in most occasions, built settlements in areas outside what are called the 1967 borders in Palestinian lands. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So when we use the term settlements, we're referring to Israeli communities that are outside of those 1967 borders that you mentioned, which are the internationally sort of accepted future boundary between the Israeli state and what would be a future Palestinian state. And so these settlements are in occupied territory. And so they're illegal under international law, specifically in the first case under the Geneva Convention, which prevents occupying powers from transferring their civilian population into occupied territory in order to gain control of that territory. And that's exactly what these settlements represent. It's a transfer of civilian population in order to accomplish, a military or a geopolitical aim of controlling territory.
So basically it seems as though the playbook is that somebody will go in and just build a house, and then somebody else will build another house next to it, and then there'll be another building and other infrastructure that sort of starts growing up around the first few buildings, and then it gets bigger and bigger, and then the Israeli military has to protect that area because there are Israelis on it, and suddenly that land has been, quote, settled by Israelis. Is that the sort of way in which it evolves each settlement?
Yeah, absolutely. And you see now, if you I spent about a year and a half in the occupied territories, in East Jerusalem and the West Bank primarily. And what you can see when you're there in the West Bank is you see settlements at sort of all stages of evolution, so to speak. So you have these sort of small hilltop outposts that the Combatants for Peace group, for example, was protesting against this past week. But you also see settlements like Malia Adumim, like the Efrat settlements around Bethlehem, that are now cities, essentially. They're suburbs. When you're in them, you would think you were in the suburbs in the U.S. You know, there's swimming pools and nicely kept lawns right next to, drought-starved fields and Palestinian villages with home demolition orders on many of the houses. So you see a real contrast between the infrastructural support that the Israeli military and the Israeli government gives to many of the settlements, and the sort of conditions that Palestinians are living under occupation right next door in many cases.
I want to talk about what Combatants for Peace did yesterday, but first I want to play some sound from the counter-demonstration they had earlier this week. Basically, the young Israelis who had set up these impromptu outposts were met by Combatants for Peace, this organization that set up their own outpost. Here's one of the members of Combatants for Peace describing what happened.
When we got to the top of the hill, we built a mock settlement of our own. Of course, the army within minutes came and took it down. We rebuilt it. The army not only took it down using dispersing us with force and with stun grenades, but also took the pieces of the tent. We don't have all of them back now. It's clear that though this is Palestinian private territory, we that came with the Palestinians couldn't build a tent there, whereas the settlement, which is illegal and against the government decisions to try and now control the expansion of new illegal settlements, is still standing there.
And that is the voice of a member of the Combatants for Peace. David Hosey, tell us who this organization is. And I understand that their action was covered only by the Arab media.
Yes. Combatants for Peace is a group of both Israelis and Palestinians who formerly were members of fighting units in their respective militaries or militant groups. Who are now working together against the accusation. And so this is a group, you know, this is an incredible group, a group that's working together across a lot of, factional differences, across national differences to work against the accusation. But the difficulty you indicated, they had this great action, this really creative action of putting up sort of a protest outpost on land that they'd been invited onto by the Palestinian owner of the land, and they were prevented from setting up even just a makeshift outpost, whereas Israeli settlers were allowed by the Israeli army to set up an actual outpost on land that did not belong to them. So you see the contrast here, and as you indicated, the difficulty of getting media attention for this kind of creative resistance. The Arab media was there, the Palestinian media was there, but there was very little international media, and none as far as I know. There's very little Israeli media. What there was, though, is that there were members of the civil society movement, of a social movement there, filming and taking advantage of new technologies, taking advantage of blogs, taking advantage of YouTube, you know, these new technologies that are allowing this information to be shared. And so what we see is that where previously, the lack of international media would have been basically a death sentence for an activity for that. Now this information is at least getting out to members of social movements, concerned citizens here in the U.S. And that's really what we focus on in the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation is, okay, given this information, what do we do as concerned U.S. citizens? Where can we plug in? How can we support these creative movements of nonviolent resistance against the Israeli occupation?
And we will link to the video that was created around this action that we played a clip from our website later today, kpfk.org/uprising. Let's talk about what President Obama is doing. What do you make of his position, his very tough position on calling for a freeze on these settlements, which some are saying he's sort of using as the easiest opening to start an Israeli-Palestinian peace deal, given that these Israeli settlements are technically illegal under a number of international resolutions. Is it wise?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we see with Obama, we see a very encouraging first step, and that is that so far he has and his administration has consistently stood their ground on the issue of Israeli settlements.
And exactly, can you explain his position exactly? Does he mean that, I wasn't clear in reading up about this, whether he meant that all new settlements must stop, whether, you know, we should freeze settlement activity, or that all the settlements need to be, you know, dismantled?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is the key question, right, is what do we mean by settlement freeze? Now, it seems like what the Obama administration has been saying, at least publicly, is that what they mean is a freeze on new construction, on new settlements, on increasing construction within existing settlements. They're certainly not talking about dismantling existing settlements, nor are they really talking about any of the other aspects of the Israeli occupation. And so that's why I said this is an encouraging first step that we're seeing. But what we're seeing is how important then it is for us as citizens, for us as activists, for us as human rights advocates to get involved. Because even this very sort of what in the big scheme of things is a minor first step, which is calling for a freeze on settlements, not even talking about dismantling, not even talking about, you know, any of the other aspects of the occupation that need to end in order for there to be just peace. We see massive resistance in Congress to this idea. We see a lot of resistance from the Israeli government. And so to me, what that says is, well, we need to be in there in the halls of Congress. We need to be in there talking to folks in the White House. We need to be there in our local communities, in our local newspapers, giving a very consistent and very simple and clear message that Israeli settlements are against international law, period, that all of them are against international law, and that they're an obstacle to a just peace in the region. And if the Obama administration is serious about a just peace, then we need to start talking about what we're going to do if the Israeli government continues to say, no, we'll keep building settlements. And I think what we have to do then is we have to look at the $2.775 billion in military aid that we're giving in 2010 to Israel, to look at the political support that we give Israel in the United Nations, and to start saying, when do we cut that? When do we end that if Israel continues to refuse to even freeze settlements, much less talk about dismantling them, much less talk about their legality under international law?
I'm speaking with David Hosey, National Media Coordinator of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. Now, David, I understand that the settlements are not necessarily supported by the vast majority of Israeli citizens. Now, that's different from the settlers themselves, as well as some of the more militant organizations like the youth group that we've talked about earlier. Can you tell me a little bit about what the position is that the Israeli population takes on the settlements?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see within the Israeli civilians a wide range of views on the issue. There are people who are very strongly in support of the settlements, either for religious reasons, for perceived national security reasons. There are people who are ambivalent. I think there's probably a large majority of Israelis who find the settler movement a bit weird and sort of right-wing wackos, but aren't really willing to put in the political will to, for example, start removing settlements. And then you have these very important Israeli activists, Israeli peace activists, justice activists, like the members of Combatants for Peace, like the group Tayush, which is an Arab and Israeli peace group, that are actually actively resisting the settlements, keeping track of their expansion, advocating with the Israeli government to stop settlement expansion. In some cases, you know, standing in front of bulldozers or standing with Palestinian families who are trying to resist eviction from their homes, when they're being thrown out for settlements to be put in their place. So you have what I would say is a minority, but a very important, very vocal minority of Israelis who are actually actively opposing the settlements. And I think those are the people who we need to support and create space for their activism, to create space for their organizing.
What about the settlers themselves? Are they a homogeneous group? I mean, I understand they're sort of a mixture of ultra-Zionist, ideologues who really believe that they need to increase Israel's footprint across Palestinian lands through these settlements. And then some of the Orthodox Jewish Israelis who may just have gone there because they couldn't afford to live in Israel proper and are not necessarily supportive of the settlement ideology. What do you know about it?
Yeah, absolutely. You have about 300,000 settlers in the West Bank, not including those in East Jerusalem. And it's a very diverse group, especially in the larger settlements that are closer to the Green Line. They're government subsidized. You get tax breaks for living there. And so there are a lot of people, members of the ultra-Orthodox community who are in general very poor, new immigrants who in general don't have a lot of financial resources. And what they see is a nice community, like I said, nicely mowed lawns and swimming pools, nice roads into Jerusalem, which are actually roads through the occupied territories that Palestinians are not allowed to use, so it's an apartheid road system. They see these nice roads, you can get into Jerusalem easily, you have cheap rent, why not live there, right? And most people, I think probably the majority of people who are settlers, are not ideologically settlers. But you have, again, you have a hardcore of religious nationalist settlers who are very problematic, who are abusive towards Palestinians, who serve sometimes in combat units in the military that are, you know, supposed to be, you know, supposedly like arbitrating disputes between settlers and Palestinians, and you can imagine how that goes. So you do absolutely have a diversity within the settlement population, but there is both kind of an element of folks who are just there sort of accidentally, who are probably, if you know they were getting subsidized housing somewhere else, would leave, and folks who are there who are really very zealous in their pursuit of the settlement regime.
David Hosey, let's talk about the politics here in the United States, but also, of course, in the interaction with Israel. Even though this may be, as you've called it, a good first step toward the U.S. Using its leverage with Israel to, you know, to demand some justice for Palestinians, how viable is it, given the structure here in the United States itself? I want to quote for you an op-ed recently by the Washington Post that said, rather than pocketing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's initial concessions, he apparently gave a speech on Palestinian statehood, which was a big deal for him, and suggested parameters for curtailing settlements accepted by previous U.S. administrations, Mr. Obama chose to insist on an absolutist demand for a settlement freeze. Palestinian and Arab leaders who had accepted previous compromises immediately hardened their positions, and they also balked at delivering the confidence-building concessions to Israel that the administration seeks. So the Washington Post, which is pretty, I think, in line with most of the mainstream media, is suggesting that Obama should have just, you know, followed what Israel wanted and not taken this, quote, absolutist stance.
Right. Well, I think that this exactly what you're quoting here shows the need for us to get involved as concerned citizens, as people who are thinking progressively about what U.S. foreign policy needs to be. This op-ed is great talking points. You should study this op-ed for the talking points that you're up against, because this idea that Netanyahu gave a speech filled with concessions, well, nonsense. Go and look at his speech and look at the speeches he gave when he was previously a prime minister. He's saying the same exact things, which is that the Palestinians can have a state, and if you look at what a state means, it's a place with no defined borders, no control over its airspace, no control over its own military, not allowed to enter into treaties with other states. In other words, take everything that makes a state, and remove it. And that's the sort of state that Netanyahu is supposedly offering the Palestinians.
And also the concessions on the settlements, would those include what I quoted earlier, which is we will let partly built structures be finished building and then allow for, quote, natural growth?
Right. And, you know, again, what does this natural growth mean? I mean, this is the same sort of rhetoric that has been kind of bounced around by Israeli politicians during this so-called peace process for years. And what have you actually seen? Like I said, living in the West Bank, what do you actually see? You see the settlements expanding every day, very simply. You see new settlements being set up, and very few of them are dismantled. One or two every now and then, it gets a lot of media attention. The Israeli military will say, oh, look, see, we've dismantled an outpost. But in general, you see consistent settlement expansion, consistent expropriation of Palestinian land to build these settlements. And so actually what needs to happen is that we need to get in this debate. We need to be writing op-eds. We need to be writing letters to the editor. We need to be talking to our members of Congress saying, no, look, the settlements are illegal under international law. Not only should they be frozen, but if there's going to be a peace, we need to talk seriously about dismantling these settlements. We need to talk seriously about how our U.S. military aid is complicit, making us complicit in violations of international law and human rights by the Israeli military. And that's where the U.S. campaign to end the occupation comes in. That's exactly what we're trying to do, is mobilize at the grassroots to be engaged in the media, to be engaged in the political process, to be engaged in corporate accountability and boycott and divestment campaigns, to shift the discourse away from this idea that somehow you know, Israeli politicians like Netanyahu are making such huge concessions and et cetera, to a discourse that revolves around human rights and international law, which is where the discussion needs to be.
And it's interesting that this op-ed, again, basically says that, implies that Obama should have accepted what other administrations have accepted, which would lead to the status quo and not actually move forward for any kind of a just peace deal. So certainly President Obama can only do so much. In light of your suggestion that people do need to get involved in the grassroots, where can listeners find out more? Can you give out a website for your organization?
Absolutely. The website of our organization is www.endtheoccupation.org. And encourage people to go on there, check out our campaign against military aid, get involved with meeting with members of Congress, look for member groups in your area. The U.S. campaign is a national coalition of 300 member groups across the country. So likely there's a member group in your area that you can get involved in. And let's get in there. Let's start changing this conversation instead of letting the Washington Post tell us what to think. Let's start talking about human rights and international law and the things that are going to make for a real and just and lasting peace.
David Hosey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
David Hosey is the National Media Coordinator of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. Again, the website is endtheoccupation.org.